And welcome to the HSJ Health Check Podcast. I'm your host, Annabelle Collins, and this week I'm joined by our Southeast correspondent, Alison Moore, and HSJ editor, Alistair McClellan. This week we are focusing on a trust that has generated more headlines than most in recent weeks. East Kent Foundation Trust has seen a disproportionate number of COVID deaths since the start of June. In fact, it recorded twice as many COVID-related deaths than any other provider over the last month. So I think the best place to start is to just give kind of a picture of what's going on at the Trust at the moment. And I'm going to come to Alistair first. If you could give listeners an introduction as what has been happening.
Thanks very much, Annabelle. So as with the majority of NHS trusts, big NHS trusts, acute trusts that were treating COVID, East Kent saw a very rapid increase in the number of COVID deaths through March until a peak in the middle of April, 13th of April, in East Kent's case. And then, in common with all most other trusts, it saw a general decline in the numbers week on week until in the 7-day period ending on the 17th of June, it was recording 14 deaths, so 14 days in the week ending on the 17th of June. However, whereas the rest of the NHS, almost without exception, continued to decline, the deaths at East Kent started to go up. And in fact, by the 29th of June, they had almost doubled to 26 in a week. Since then, they have fallen down again to around 14 on the 3rd of July. But since the 3rd of July, they have basically stayed between 11 and 17 deaths in a 7-day period and continue to stay at that level. It's important to be saying that all the while, the rest of the NHS, almost without exception, as I say, has continued to see a very steady decline, and emphasized rapid decline in COVID-related deaths within hospitals. As you said in your introduction, East Kent has now seen twice as many deaths in COVID-related deaths in the last 30 days than any other trust. The second place it's seen 70 deaths, and Leicester University Hospitals Leicester has seen 30. East Kent is now accounting for 1 in 10 of all COVID-related hospital deaths. It is now accounting for twice as many deaths in a weekly period than in all of London in the most recent period, 7-day period. London saw 5 hospital deaths COVID related, and East Kent saw 11. So what we're seeing in a situation is something that has massively bucked the trend of what's happening in the NHS. Alison, who we'll hear from in a minute, has been doing a series of stories which is trying to bring this to light. And one of the reasons we wanted to do this podcast is that there has been a culture of denial within the trust, within the commissioner, and within the broader regulatory oversight about this. Originally, it was suggested that the high death rate was to do with levels of infection in the community. Now, Ashford, which is one of the areas, and Folkestone, one of the areas covered by East Kent, did have a raised area of infection, but nowhere near that, for example, in Leicester, which is producing half the number of deaths that East Kent, and nowhere near close enough to justify it. It then admitted, under questioning from Alison, that it had that needed help within infection control, and had asked NHS England for help. And then last week it announced that it decided to test all 9,000 staff for COVID. Today we reveal that 9 wards at the Trust had an infection control problem, but East Kent is still refusing to expand on the nature of that problem. I've got quite a lot to say about what I think this says about the way that East Kent is being run and being scrutinised and managed at a system level. But it would be useful, I think, now to hear a little bit from Alison about the broader context of East Kent's recent history, because I think that shines a lot of light on what I think is a growing scandal.
Yes, absolutely. Alison, bringing you in, you've been covering East Kent for a long time.
A very long time.
If you could bring in some of that context, I think that would be really, really helpful.
Well, I suppose the expression troubled trust is probably a little overused, but it certainly applies to East Kent. This is a trust that was formed from a merger of 3 predecessors in the early 2000s. It wasn't an exactly happy marriage of willing partners. As part of the reason behind it was that there was a need to reconfigure, and having one organisation made that possible. That meant the hospital in Canterbury, the Kent in Canterbury, lost some services, which has been a bone of contention ever since. Since then, the trust initially went along fairly happily. Things weren't too bad. Since about 2010, 2012, things have gone downhill. It was placed in special measures in 2014 after getting an inadequate CQC rating. The long-standing chief executive, Stuart Bain, retired shortly afterwards. And it then had a couple of temporary chief executives. Matthew Kershaw, who was the chief executive in 2017, left after enormous pressure from the Department of Health relating to A&E performance. At the time, it was meant to be one of the worst 2 trusts in the country for its A&E performance against the 4-hour target. And he was replaced by Susan Acott, who ran the small but fairly successful Dartford Aggression Trust. She came there temporarily, has ended up staying ever since. The chair, Nikki Cole, under Matthew Kershaw, also resigned, replaced by Peter Carter, the former RCN head, again as a temporary measure. And he was then in turn retired from that role, and it was taken over by Stephen Smith. So that brings us to about 2017. Since then, things have been very, very rocky for the trust. It started the process of moving towards a reconfiguration, really finishing the business that had started in the early 2000s, hadn't been completed at that point. That reconfiguration got bogged down. There were new requirements from NHS England and improvement around affordability and the need for business cases to be assessed before you could go out to public consultation. We're now 2.5, 2.75 years on from the point at which the reconfiguration was first mooted. And so far, we haven't got to public consultation. I think we are some distance from it still. Costs of the proposed solutions have also risen. That's been a big drain on trust management. They've had to manage all of that while at the same time dealing with multiple problems within the trust. Some of those problems involve its maternity services. Earlier this year, we saw a harrowing inquest into a baby who died a few days after birth at one of the hospitals. This uncovered various problems, a number of other cases of babies who either died or suffered significant damage at birth. It's led to an independent inquiry led by Bill Kirkup. There's also been a focus on its paediatric services. There was a very poor CQC report which came out last year. And most recently, there's been a CQC report on A&E, which has revealed some infection control problems at the William Harvey Hospital, which is the Trust's main hospital in Ashford. trust has struggled during winters as well. It tends to get a little bit overwhelmed by the number of people coming through the doors in A&E. So all in all, it's a trust which has a significant number of problems, all of which requires input from management. I think management must be extremely stretched trying to cope with all of these at once.
And it just, Annabelle, if I just might interject here with just a couple of bits of context around this history. Alison referred, and I just think it's worth mentioning, the way in which changes at national policy level can really affect local organisations negatively. With the CQC inspection in what, 2004, when was it put in special measures out? In 2014, wasn't it?
Yes, indeed. Yes.
Now, that was one of the very first inspections carried out by the sort of new look CQC after Francis under the when they had a chief inspector of hospitals for the first time. And many listeners to this podcast will know that at that time, CQC inspections were a bit, shall we say, flaky, something they admit themselves now. They were variable in quality. And East Kent being designated as inadequate came out of the blue to the trust, to the regulators there. I mean, clearly it was, there were some problems there, but the level of censure the CQC gave it really surprised everyone and accelerated Stuart Bain's departure, who went from somebody who was relatively highly regarded to somebody who's running an inadequate trust and therefore not to be trusted. And it really sort of bashed the confidence of the trust and really set it off centre. Not to say, for example, that there wasn't good reason for some of the criticisms the CQC made. It was just the sheer surprisingness of it and the fact that it was, in short, a bit heavy-handed. And then we come to Matthew Kershaw. Now, subscribers to HSJ will remember this story very well. It still sits, I think, as the third best read story HSJ has ever written in recent times. And Matthew Kershaw, along with the chief executive of the North Middlesex, I am trying to drag from my memory, was sacked. And basically, they were sacked as examples to other chief executives around A&E performance. And there was a conversation between Jeremy Hunt, Jim Mackey, and Simon Stevens, and a few other people. And Hunt said, "I want to basically set an example." Stevens said, "Yes, I think that's probably a good idea." Jim Mackey said, "Who do you want me to sack then?" And Hunt said, "Well, that's up to you." And basically, they went away and picked some names out of a hat. I'm exaggerating, but only a little. And Matthew, who I think was largely picked because he wouldn't kick up a fuss, was one of those people who got booted out. And I think I just wanted to stress those points in the way in which, you know, there you see a care quality inspectorate in its early days making a series of, if not poor judgments, then judgments that are made in the wrong way or without, you know, creating the context, first of all. And then a Secretary of State wanting to send a message which, you know, could it is noticeable that, you know, that message did seem to work, if I seem to remember. It was very clearly received, but it had quite a negative consequence for the trust, who suddenly had its chief executive ripped away from it when it could have been any other. It could have been a dozen other trusts who'd might have suffered the same fate.
Thanks, Alistair. And Alison, I was just after you've kind of obviously you've described some of the difficulties a trust has faced for quite a long time. How did that? What kind of position did that leave it in to deal with the pandemic at the very beginning? I'd be quite interested to hear how it coped, perhaps throughout the initial peak.
Well, overall, it wasn't in that bad of a position in March. It hadn't had a particularly bad winter. Like a number of other trusts, it does suffer very badly in winters, which are plagued by flu and snow and things like that. So it was in a reasonable position, I feel, in March, a bit battered by what was going on in its paediatric and maternity services. I think morale may well have been affected by that.
Mm.
But it wasn't in a terrible position. It had a relatively slow build-up in terms of COVID. And I think there might be a good case for saying that in Kent, we were perhaps a week or two behind London in terms of the build up and then the peak.
Mm.
It's what's happened since then that is so interesting, because if you plot this on a graph, you can see almost every other trust in the country having a bell-shaped curve coming down very rapidly, beginning to hollow out with just a few deaths each week. The decline in East Kent has been much, much slower. It's still having a significant number of deaths, as we know, and it continued having about two-thirds of the number of deaths at the peak for much longer than other trusts.
And so I think now it'd be interesting to hear what... Obviously, it's in a very precarious position at the moment. What's being done locally to try and bring these numbers down, and how have perhaps the ICS and also commissioners responded?
Well, we don't really have a function in ICS yet. We're still largely in the SDP phase. The commissioners have done something. And I do think recognition of this problem came very late, both within the trust and outside. Even beginning of last week, when I was talking to people within the trust, they seemed unaware that they had a particular problem. Commissioners have taken some action in terms of support for infection control. What emerged towards the middle and end of last week was a focus on infection control that hadn't been there before from both the national side and the commissioners, which led me to believe, and I don't quite know whether this is true or not, that one of the major causes of the number of COVID deaths was transmission within hospital. Now, I have been told of a number of cases where people apparently didn't have COVID when they came into hospital, but subsequently died of it.
And that's
certainly a factor, I feel.
And I was just going to ask about staff infections. We've obviously seen some quite dramatic cases recently, and I'm thinking of Hillingdon. How has it been in East Kent? Have there been instances of staff having to self-isolate? What's the pressure like on the workforce?
The Trust has not given any figures for self-isolation, as far as I'm aware. They have been undergoing a very rapid testing process, which covers all 9,000 staff, both of the Trust and its subsidiary company, which provides facilities and estate management, so cleaners, the normal things. They plan to test all 9,000 in 5 days, which I think is probably unprecedented in the NHS. As far as I know, they have succeeded in doing that. They were certainly well on track from what I understand. However, the initial indications are of a relatively low level of infections amongst the staff. I'm told in the first 6,000 or so that were tested, they were only getting a handful of cases, which came up as positive. That's slightly surprising, frankly, and the Trust is not yet saying openly what the figures are. I think it feels that the figures so far may be slightly misleading, because there are still some results to come in, and it's only when they get all 9,000 results that they'll be able to talk about whether there has been a problem within the staff, and that problem will would predominantly be asymptomatic staff who are continuing to go to work unaware that they have COVID.
Mm. Thank you, Alison. And I think Alison mentioned earlier that there's kind of a lack of willingness to engage with the problems in East Kent. And in the last sort of 5 minutes of the podcast, I think it'd be really useful to talk about why this is problematic and perhaps also lessons that other trusts can learn from East Kent. And perhaps, Alison, using your kind of expert knowledge of the trust, what the next few weeks and months could hold for it. I mean, maybe that's impossible to say, but maybe turning to Alistair next around, you know, that lack of willingness to engage.
So today, Alison reports that the commissioner, the lead commissioner, who's the accountable officer for the lead commissioner, whose name I will not mention to spare his blushes, went before the local council scrutiny committee and described the trust death rate as relatively low. You know, it plainly is not. It is plainly very, very high. So either he is very ill-informed or he is trying to mislead the council. I've helped Alison on this story and I've seen her attempt to engage with the local NHS England office, with the head office, with the Care Quality Commission. We do a lot of these stories, as listeners to this podcast will know, and you just get a sense of people just not wanting to hear what we've got to say, as if, well, this isn't really a problem, is it? It's, you know, 12 deaths, you know, what's that, you know, type thing. We've tried to get interest from the, we've tried to get comment from the local MPs. Labour's Rosie Duffield has taken an interest, perhaps not unsurprisingly, but the other local MPs have up until today been silent, though I understand Damien Green, remember him, who's the Ashford MP, has given a quote to the local press today. We've heard nothing from Matt Hancock or indeed from Jeremy Hunt, who has a lot of interest in patient safety and inspection, infection control. And I really get the impression that the view is, you know, sort of paraphrase, that people are thinking, well, it's only a dozen or so deaths, which shouldn't have happened. And we saw thousands at the peak, and deaths in hospitals, they're no longer the problem. And this will sort itself out, over time. Well, a very relevant point to make is that it isn't sorting itself out. It is still persisting. If you look forward, so there's always a lag in deaths being reported. So deaths are never seen as robust. Deaths, the figures are only seen to robust up to a certain date, and the current date is 17th of July. But if you look at the four days since then, during that time, Kent has recorded five deaths, and the other 219 NHS organisations who are treating COVID, NHS and private sector organisations who are treating COVID patients, have seen, I think it's 16. You know, so this problem is not going away. It is still persisting very, and of course, if I was a resident of East Kent, I would be thinking forward to the winter and to a potential second wave and thinking, if this is how they cope with the current levels of infection, how on earth will they cope if we do indeed get a fully fledged second wave? Or even if we do get the kind of Leicester type outbreak in Ashford or Margate or somewhere like that. Meanwhile, I'm also thinking that I hope East Kent have put aside a significant amount of cash for the payouts it's going to incur when the relatives of people who've died in that trust from COVID, who caught COVID when they went into the trust, which I think is the unavoidable conclusion of what is happening at the moment, decide to take the trust to court. And, you know, what really worries me about this is that what happens in the NHS is that there are certain narratives that run, and those that are running with the narrative, those issues that were running with the narrative, they get a lot of attention. Now, the idea that there might be a particular spike in hospitals, and therefore this is an infection control problem, not a community infection problem, well, that doesn't just fit with the narrative. It suggests the NHS itself might be doing something wrong, and that doesn't fit with the narrative. And therefore, nobody who might normally be paying attention to or commenting on it does so. And I think that is a very dangerous place for the NHS to be as we approach winter and a potential second wave.
Thank you, Alistair. And Alison, just coming with some final comments from you. I mentioned before kind of looking forward, what would you make of those? What would you make of those comments?
Well, I think the trust is in quite deep trouble at the moment. It has so many significant issues. The maternity investigation is going to be, I imagine, a very unpleasant and harrowing time for the trust, as is expected to report at some point next year. I don't think some of the issues of quality of care within the trust have been fully resolved. For example, in the paediatric CQC inspection last year, there were a lot of really, really concerning things. I don't think it's in a good place to cope with the winter. I think if we get bad flu, there is a very serious risk of overcrowding in A&E again. And obviously, that form of overcrowding is how COVID spreads. And we could end up with a double peak for both COVID and flu if we're not careful. I feel incredibly sorry for the staff, and met many people over the years who work there. As with most NHS staff, they're delightful, they're committed. They're also rather kept in the dark about what's going on around some of these issues. I don't get the impression there is an open communication about the trust problems, or even sometimes an open acknowledgement that there are problems. And against the wider background, at some point this trust is going to have to reconfigure services. That either means creating a super hospital in Canterbury, a new build, largely new build, or enhancing the services at William Harvey. I can't tell you how controversial that is in the county. It's going to put people's backs up at a time when the trust is going to need as much support as possible and needs to command the confidence of the population of East Kent.
Thank you, Alison. I can't imagine how scary it must be for staff at the moment, kind of seeing those figures really very high. Thank you both so much. We've come to the end of the podcast this week. And just to remind listeners that the HSJ Health Check podcast is available every week on the hsj.co.uk website and across all main podcast channels. Please continue to subscribe and share, and do get in touch with us if there's something you'd like to see us discuss. Thank you so much, and we'll see you next week.